Welcome to Bite Size Dental Marketing. In this episode, we talk to the one and only Marissa Krugoff. Marissa is co-founder of the Dental Practice Management Agency and is a certified life coach trained under Tony Robbins. With over 25 years in dentistry, Marissa brings a rare blend of clinical expertise, business strategy, and a people-first leadership to the table. We talk about the real challenges that dentists face when they go straight from graduating into being expected to own and run their own dental practice. Marissa shares how understanding human needs, training with intention, and practicing radical candor can transform not only the systems in your practice, but also your entire team. Enjoy. So Marissa, one thing that I always love to do is to just understand the background and the story of our guest when they come and join us on the podcast. I went and I had a look, and everything from life coach to your experience in dentistry to the type of unique techniques that you implement, you don't just learn that overnight. So if you can please just give us a bit about your background and how your journey has led you to where you are today.
Absolutely, yeah. So I've been in dentistry my whole life. I started when I was a very young teen, and I started as a hygiene coordinator. And I was very lucky to be with a dentist that taught me kind of everything dental. He taught me how to read x-rays and kind of taught me like you would an associate. And so I fell in love with dentistry, and his wife taught me everything insurance. And so eventually that led me to the front office, where I was a front office admin person, went to an office manager, and then eventually, I was a regional manager for a large DSO or a corporate office dentistry. I loved that because I could help people on a greater scale. But what I was missing was the culture. And so I loved the systems. Corporate has some beautiful systems, but what they are missing typically, not always, is that culture and communication piece. And I just thought if you could marry the two of those, what could that do for an office? So that's why I started consulting, and being able to grow that in the practices and watch not only the humans grow, but the business grow. Because if you grow the humans, you grow the business. I wanted to do more, and I found life coaching. I took a class and got certified under Tony Robbins. For those of you who are under 35, Tony Robbins is a big life coach guru. He was like the first authentic rough and tumble kind of life coach. And I just really resonated with that. I thought he was so authentic that I wanted to be like that. So I got certified under him, and we now use that in our business to grow communication, grow culture, grow the humans, and couple that with that beautiful system of accountability that grows the business. And that it's been amazing. It just kind of has been a journey that fell in my lap, but I don't say no to anything. It's always, yes, I want to know more. Just keep growing.
Yeah, the Tony Robbins, you being a certified Tony Robbins coach, I saw that and I was like, that is very interesting. I definitely want to ask Marissa about that. Was it just like you said, now you resonate with him and you're like, I just want to learn more and go take that on? Or was it that was dentistry in the back of your mind of we need to marry this in some way? Or did it just come together for you when you had done both those things?
Dentistry was not in my mindset at all when I took those classes. I really wanted to grow people and give back. That's my purpose, is to give back to people and to help them find their best selves. That's my purpose. And it took me a minute to find out that that was my purpose, but I just get to do it both with my life coaching and with dentistry now. And I just kind of put those both together because I love them both.
One thing that I hear again and again and again that I feel so many dentists are faced with is they study for a minimum of 8 years to even just become a dentist. I mean, now I don't know anything else at this point. I've just become a dentist. And they're then thrown into this world where they're expected to run a business and know team dynamics and the psychology of a team and dealing with the emotions of a team and processes. What is your thoughts on the experience that dentists have during that time, during that transition of having to wear so many hats when they've just kind of completed one chapter?
When you first get out of dental school as a dentist, what I've seen time and time again is they're just getting their feet like on solid ground of, oh, I don't have to have a professor check me every time I do something. Oh, my crown can't take me 4 hours to do, you know, like they're just getting the dental piece. And so it really takes about 3 to 5 years for them to start to look up and be like, okay, I've got this dentistry thing down, and the dentistry is the easy part. It's all the other things you were talking about, the business, all of that stuff. And, you know, we have this joke in dentistry that dentists don't know business because we don't teach it to them in dental school. Kind of where it's always, you know, oh, they're terrible, business people. But the honest truth is that joke is not that funny, because after these docs get out, within 5 years of them graduating, typically most of them own a business, a small business that they don't know how to run. And I think that that's the scary part for me. You know, they know the dentistry, that's easy to them. You know, there's some harder things, but what they don't know is, what's the admin team doing? How are they billing and collecting money? How are they supposed to take all that paperwork at the end of the day and make sure that the bank account matches that stuff? How are they supposed to deal with the fact that Susie, the hygienist, is mad at, you know, Rachel, the assistant, because they're not doing their own instruments? You know, like all of that stuff. Or, you know, the talent pool is so shallow in dentistry right now that you can't find a great human. If you do, they want so much money. How are you going to pay them? So all of these things, including bill paying, all that, it stacks up, and they're in a mouth all day long. So it's really hard for them to switch gears from, I have to be the main producer, to, oh my gosh, my business has to be ran as well. And honestly, the best advice I have in those moments is, get a team of Avengers. Like, you need just everybody that can teach you how to do those things. One of the things I learned in my life coaching class that Tony Robbins preaches is, if you go your lifetime and learn your lessons, you'll know a lifetime of lessons. But if you get those gurus or those people that are just like, I know these things very well, and you learn what they know, you've learned many lifetimes of things. And I think sometimes dentists, especially because they're in their own small little practice, they're on their own isolated island. They know what they know. And sometimes they're held hostage by their employees because of that. So it's hard. That's the biggest challenge I see, is the business piece. It's not the dentistry. You can figure that out. And there's plenty of CE out there if you can't. But when it comes to business, there's not that many. And, you know, recently, within the last 3 years, I have caught over $1 million of embezzlement just in dental practices, because dentists don't know their business. They take whatever, you know, Susie at the front desk tells them at face value, because they have no idea what insurance is doing, how they're billing, how they're collecting, what are they supposed to do with all these papers at the end of the day. So it's, if I, again, had the best advice I could get, is get educated on your business. Because that's the part, no matter how much you're producing, if someone's taking your money or not billing it correctly or writing it off erroneously, that's hurtful.
What are those main problems, besides embezzlement, or the problems inside of the team or the team dynamics that you are seeing with all of the dental practices that you've worked with in your time? What are some core issues that you can mention to us that dentists maybe won't feel as alone, or can get a better understanding of, hey, these things are happening, but you can do something about it?
Lately, what I've seen the most of is dentists being held hostage by the person that's the only person that knows how to do this thing. Whether, and typically it's admin team, because, you know, you can find an assistant that knows how to do things, unless the assistant that's leaving is the only one that knows how to run your airway practice, or the only one that knows how to do your CEREC crown. So, you know, obviously making sure that people are cross-trained. I oftentimes hear docs when I go in, you know, and we're just doing our observation to see if they want to be a client, and we want to bring them into our program. I hear them tell me, oh yeah, you know, if Susie ever goes on vacation, my insurance claims don't get posted. Like, I don't get paid. So they just stack up and I wait for her to come back, and then she posts them because nobody else knows how to do it, you know, or she won't let anybody else. So there's just certain things that I think, you know, having people cross-trained, making sure that no one can hold you hostage in your own business because of their level of knowledge is very good. That's a good way to protect your business. You know, the other thing that I see is lack of leadership. I have a lot of doctors that, you know, because they're in a face all day, and they frankly didn't want to be business owners, they wanted to be dentists. So, you know, they get done with that and they're so exhausted, they don't want to have to go into the leadership mode and holding people accountable. And it's just like, gosh, I just want to go home. And I get it. You know, after all of that, I totally understand that. But when we sign up to be a business owner, it is an ultimately heavy responsibility. And that means we take on all of it. And again, that's having systems of accountability, making sure you're holding people accountable so that they're coming to you and bringing you that information instead of you like wondering all the time, which is something we set up with our teams. But we years ago put leadership first. So we have a 12-month program. Our first 2 months is just leadership. It's making sure that the doctor and the leadership, whoever that might be, if they have leads or office manager, whatever, are solid, communicating well, holding people accountable, creating systems well before we ever even work with the team. Because if we don't, it's going to fail. It's not going to work.
And you mentioned a word multiple times there, accountability, accountability. I heard that word 3 or 4 times now. Tell me, I know that is a cornerstone of the work that you do and the systems that you implement with practices. What does accountability mean to you in a practice?
You know, accountability is, we have set these systems. We've all agreed that this is how we're going to do something. And our integrity level is so high that we hold each other accountable. It doesn't have to be a doctor or an office manager. It could be a front office person holding an assistant accountable to passing really well so that they can get good treatment acceptance and the patient is communicated well with. It could be, I'm going to go to the person that I have an issue with instead of gossiping behind their back or, you know, going and tattling to somebody that is in leadership. I'm going to kindly go to them. And now I have ways to do it and ask them, hey, what's going on for you? You haven't been showing up to huddle on time. Showing up to huddle on time. Everybody shows up on time because they know that's what's expected. So there's plenty of agreements and rules, but a lot of it is just us agreeing together that this is how we are going to roll. This is our brand. This is who we are. And we are unapologetic about holding everybody accountable. It's kind. But when we see teams get to that level, it has to come from the doctor first, though, or the owner first.
Because
the tail will wag the dog. Like if they're not holding people accountable, all of a sudden they're like, none of these systems work. We had block booking forever ago, but no one ever followed it. And the first thing I wonder is, well, why isn't the doctor holding them accountable? And usually it's because they're uncomfortable with having those hard conversations, which is 90% of people, right? Nobody wants to have that sit down conversation and talk about what people aren't doing right. But the level of success that doctors achieve, or any person really in their life, is equal to the level of hard conversations they're willing to have.
Just that complete radical candor of this is what's going on. And I loved what you said there of, if the team, and that's why I know you said now talent density is thin, but I will still say it, the team that you choose and surround yourself with needs to agree with the vision of the practice, the work ethic of the practice, the type of patients we want in the practice, how we want to treat our patients. I guess I'll ask you then, let's say I am trying to do that as a dentist, but Ian is a difficult team member. And Ian, I've asked Ian to show up now. I've asked Ian to do this a certain way and that a certain way. And I'm still struggling. And the team knows it and the doctor knows it. But Marissa, I can't fire Ian because where am I going to find another hygienist? Or where am I going to find? Because it's a problem. So where do you land on that when that does become a problem? You can't necessarily fire someone, but you need to deal with it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we teach what we call high confront. So when moments happen that are little, like, you know, Ian first decides that he's not going to show up to huddle, you know, I'm going to immediately pull him in privately and have a conversation about what's going on for him. I noticed you were not in huddle today on time. What's happening for you? Immediately.
I'm not accusing. I'm first just asking the why to try and understand so that it does, so the person doesn't get defensive immediately.
Exactly. Yeah, because if you get defensive, your walls are up and you're disconnecting to self-protect.
100%.
So I just have a human conversation. You know, I had to have 3 of these last week with a team, with different team members. It happens a lot. But, you know, what conversations have always worked well for me, and I learned this way back in my DSO days, is when you sit with someone and you pull their walls down so that they're human and you're human on a level, and it's not me coming down at you, you're bad, you did something wrong. It's more of a, you know, Ian, you are so valuable to this team. When you show up to huddle, you're prepared, you're ready, you're my rock star, and you bring such a light. We're always so happy and like joyful when you're here. When you're not, I notice it. and I need you to be here. Tell me what's going on for you that's having you not be here, and I listen. And once you give me whatever the reason is, can I count on you in the future to show up for us? I want you on this team. Can I count on you for that? So I just already told you, you've got this beauty, this crap that you're doing in the middle, it's kind of overshadowing your beauty. Can I count on you to give me your beauty? Because I need that. I look forward to it every day. That's a different conversation than if you don't show back up to huddle, I'm going to write you up and you're going to get fired.
Would you say most dentists do that? I know it's not their fault. Dentists aren't taught psychology or the type of techniques that you just said of build someone up, empower them, don't just tell them what they did wrong. I mean, I'm sure we get it wrong every day in our daily lives too with how we approach it. So how can dentists change? Are there some techniques besides what you said now that you learned with the Tony Robbins coaching and stuff that people can use to help them to keep mind of these things as they work with their staff?
Yeah, I mean, you know, what we do on our team is we do a DISC personality profile for all of our people, for every team member, and then we talk about it with the team. So everyone communicates differently. Some people are very direct. Some people are a little bit more sensitive. You know, some people are more analytical. So we break that down for the doctors and the leadership so they know exactly who they're dealing with. And then we also talk about the six basic human needs, which is a Tony Robbins, you know, idealism, but it basically talks about which human need is your most important one that drives you. So there's certainty, uncertainty, love and connection, significance. Those are the top four. Those are the main ones that we have as drivers. So certainty is just, I need to know that my paycheck is here at 4 p.m. on Friday, like you said it was going to be. Like I don't like not knowing. So it's I'm not going to go to Vegas and on a whim and like, you know, go live my life like that. Nope. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to plan it for 7 months, right? That's certainty. Exactly. And whereas variety would be the person that's like, hey, you want to go to Vegas right now, Ian? And you'd be like, heck yeah, let's go to Vegas. I'm down. I don't care what we're doing. Let's just
don't
go right
threaten
now.
Me with a good time.
Exactly. And you know, significance are people that really need to know that what they're doing is unique and special, and they need that attaboy often. They need people to notice how great they're doing. And, you know, love and connection is pretty self-explanatory. It's just they need to feel important and loved and connected with and with the team as well, not just them specifically. We all have that in us. We all need those things. Like it's like the food, water, and you know, shelter of the spirit, basically, that we have to have those things. And so those four top basic human needs for us is find out which one is driving that person. Because if it's significance for you and you're not showing up to huddle, that thing that I just said about, I need you here, you're my rock star, I lean on you, it fills you up. You're like, oh my God, they need me here.
That's my one. I was just about to say, Marissa, as you mentioned and explained that, that is 100% me. Like if I lose significance in the work that I do, or if I'm working on something and I've not gotten some direction from Eric and Andre or my team members or something as like, hey, this is aligned with what we need in the HC. You're doing great, amazing. It's not about feeding the ego as much as it really just is about that reassurance. And that probably goes back to my childhood days where my mother was someone that was very telling me like, you're doing an amazing job. Keep going. I know you took one on the chin, but you can do this and we need you. Like, so I can see how all of us, I always like to say is, we are children in some way. We all grew up in a certain way, needing certain things. And if you can be the type of boss or the type of leader that can understand the employees, as you just said, and to tap into that side, not to manipulate, but to actually encourage and engage and support.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the magic. That's the magic.
100%. It's not one size fits all. And that's a thing I often get from docs is like, how do I do all of this for all these people? It's sad to say, but it's like kids, right? Like if you had six kids, you wouldn't be able to treat them all the same. They all need different things. So what we help them, and that's why we do leadership ahead of time, is we help them figure out what do each one of their kids need, right? Like, what is it that they need? Because if I come to you and give you significance and you need certainty, that's a different conversation. That's not going to fill you up. It's not going to work for you. So I need to figure out what your driver is, exactly what your personality style is, and then I can come and communicate to you in a way that you're really going to hear me and it's going to make a difference. And if that doesn't work, have we had to fire people? You bet. I mean, there's plenty of times, but I will tell you, I've never once fired anybody ever in all my 28 years in dentistry and not had them look at me and say, I know I lost this job for myself. because I worked through that with them. I tried everything I could to support them. I asked them what they needed. And in the end, I didn't take that job from them. They lost it on their own. But you have to be unapologetic about that. You know, I think because the talent pool is so shallow, people are accepting people that should not be in their business, and they're losing the good people because they're doing it. And when doctors are scared to let someone go because, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? Susie's been here forever or whatever, you know, whatever the answer is. It's like you're running forward with a weight around your waist. You are not going anywhere until you let go of that person. And every person has been like, I wish we would have done that sooner. We are so much better without that person.
100%. And you just sparked a thought for me, Marissa. Can you share with us the toxicity or how negative that is actually to your business if you try and hold on to that person just because you're scared of they've been here so long, or I'm not going to be able to find someone else? Have you seen examples of it destroying a practice's culture or even the production of that practice, the actual success of that business?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I've seen it happen time and time again, where, you know, docs are, for whatever reason, they're unable or unwilling to let that person go. And it ultimately does affect production. I mean, like, their numbers start to tank. And there's been clients I've had to let go because they weren't willing to take their business by the horns and be like, no, this is my business. I am working hard about it to get it where I need it to be. And they weren't willing to do those hard things. And I can't get people past that success level. I can't. I can only get them so far if they're unwilling to make a change. You know, it's my same in my life coaching. When people tell me they want change, but they actually show me they want change are two very different things. So I have plenty of people that say, I want to lose weight, Marissa. I want to save money. I want to, you know, have a better relationship, whatever, but they don't do the work. Well, that's not true. You don't want it. So at some level, we've had to let clients like just go fly on their own because they weren't willing to make those hard decisions. Because for me, I cannot sit back and watch them not be successful because they're unwilling to make those hard decisions. Exactly. We don't get to do that in business and be successful. You can't have both things.
Nothing changes if nothing changes.
Exactly. Yep. And you will get what you allow.
Yeah, you will get what you allow. And it can even be one employee. It does not have to be this person's bad. And that I've seen time and again, as you mentioned now, Marissa, like one person in a team can just poison that entire well and just make it bad for everyone. So dentists, like, really listen to what Marissa is saying here. It can ultimately impact your business in a very real way and make those difficult decisions. Like, you need to step up and do something if you want to protect your baby, because that at the end of the day, it is that business is not only looking after that one person, it's looking after your family, the other families that's also in that Absolutely. Business, and this whole tribe, and the patients that love and care for your practice that want to come to you deserve better. So practice doing the uncomfortable things, as Marissa is saying. You've said that a one-size-fits-all type of approach does not work with practices because each practice has their own needs based on their team. Can you share with us a bit about why you've taken that approach, how it applies in the real life for when you go to a practice or you judge these things?
Yeah, you know, I think all of the people that are on my and my business partner Chris's team now, in our wolf pack, we've all had consultants in the past before we became them. And we all had the consultant that really tried to squeeze us into that cookie cutter approach, no matter where we were, small town, big town, whatever. And what we noticed was that it doesn't work. You know, you have certain pieces of it that might work, but not all inclusive. And when dentists go from consultant to consultant to consultant to consultant, they have all these weird mismatch systems. They don't know what's going, like, it's too much. The team gets confused. It's a lot. So we really try and customize the best we can so that they have this one-stop shop, and we're happy to do the 12-month program and let them fly. We do not keep our clients into perpetuity like most people do, because we want them to go out and never need a consultant again. They shouldn't if they keep doing the right things, right? So what we do first is we do an observation. We see what they're doing well, and we don't touch it. We might spit shine in a little bit, but that's it. Like, we're not touching the good stuff. But the stuff that might need some more love, we really go in and dive into each department. So we have department trainers for each department. So we have assistant trainers, digital dentistry trainers, hygiene trainers, admin trainers, leadership trainers. And then Doc, we do the business training with. And we go through each department and just leave no stone unturned. And it's really customized to creating an SOP manual for each one of those. And then we leave them with an online electronic SOP manual for each department. Again, so they don't need us forever or anyone else for that matter. But that really has been our best approach to see, to make sure that all of the things really fit in well. That's how we customize it and why we customize it. Because again, not everyone's the same. I can't go to, you know, I grew up in a very small town and the dentist there that I started with, he did not do things like those big DSOs did down in downtown Denver. Right. And nor should he have. Right. So I think us looking at that and realizing that every single office is different. Now, do we have a core set of 12-month program? This is how we do this every single month. Yes, we do. But we kind of customize it along the way to make sure that they have exactly what they need.
You obviously work across multiple types of dentistry, and you've worked with all types of people, all types of dentists. Have you picked up any trends and things in certain types of dentistry or in certain even areas in the States or the work that you do that you're like, we tend to keep finding these type of problems with this kind of, or like a cosmetic dentistry because of them having to deal with X, Y, and Z, or maybe an implant specialist because their systems are a bit different and the type of money that's being dealt with is full arch $40,000, so it's a bit different than the general? Or do you kind of see it as these are problems that dentists are dealing with and we need to solve them?
They're honestly very similar. There's like, it's all the stuff we've been talking about, you know, holding team accountable and running the business and what to do. And I don't have enough time and, you know, all the things. Like it's all exactly the same. There really isn't much difference. I mean, of course, like a surgeon's going to have a couple of different things as far as systems go differently. But for the most part, the bigger issues that we're seeing, it's mostly just not knowing how to communicate well with the team and not having the gumption to hold them accountable.
And is there anything, if you look forward, I mean, the dental industry moves fast. Trends and things that you're seeing, I'm even just thinking how technology changes or how we work with insurance companies or how anything with how fast the industry is moving. What are you seeing that dentists will potentially deal with in the future and that they can be aware of within their team dynamics or how they're running their business that they can think about?
The biggest thing that, you know, we've seen lately that's been just kind of like this bubbling tumultuous thing is insurance. And it's getting harder and harder to work with them. You know, there's all these different rules. They're not paying these things. You have to have this x-ray and that x-ray. It has to be this many days between this to get paid for this. Like there's so much that I'm starting to see more and more doctors be like, I don't care anymore about how many new patients I have. I don't want to be in network with all these insurances. Because, you know, that's a big marketing push for doctors that's how they market. I just get in network with a bunch of insurances. Even if I get them negotiated with a PPO negotiator and I'm getting pretty good reimbursements, you're getting good reimbursements if insurance pays you. If your front office knows how to appeal things and does the hard work, if they follow up, you know, it's so time consuming. And so I think within the next 5 years, hopefully sooner, we're going to start to see a shift of dentists being like, I'm done with this. I'm not, you know, I'm over the insurance dictating my care. And sadly, it has.
You need a tough person at that front desk or the person that's doing your insurance claims and those things to battle with these people. And often that is, I know that's likely where your team comes into in training these people and helping these people, but it's, man, that's a difficult job because insurance companies make money when they don't pay you money.
So exactly.
That is ultimately their goal, is to make this as difficult. And I mean, I hear this similarly to you, Marissa. I hear this all the time. It's just like, I'm sick of these insurance companies that are trying to dictate the type of care that I do, the money that I'm actually going to make from this. And sometimes you do all that work and then the insurance is like, no, we're not going to cover that, or we're not going to reimburse for that part or something. And it just, it's tough. It creates problems. So I'm with you. Marissa, I have a last question for you, which is something that I always enjoy doing. Is this is your megaphone. This is your platform now to, if you had a message to dentists out there now to summarize a bit what we spoke about and everything that you've learned in all the years, What stays true to you after all of these years of being in dentistry that you want dentists to understand?
That's a really good question. And it kind of reminded me of an article that I read years ago in Dental Economics that talked about how the average US dentist spends anywhere from like $8,000 to $16,000 on clinical CE every year, just becoming a better dentist, clinician, whatever. But the article later goes on to talk about how the average US dentist spends $0 to $100 on anything business acumen, leadership, communication, $0 to $100. So that would be my biggest push and best advice I could give a dental practice owner is educate yourself and don't just grab, you know, podcast after podcast after book after, you know, this guy that you used to know in dental school. Like, get somebody who is knowledgeable in that specific thing that you're trying to learn and find out what they have to give you so that you can have their lifetime of knowledge. I mean, we are small business owners. We are. And so it's very important that we protect our business. And the only way you can do that is by knowing the ins and outs of everything, especially that front desk. Like I said, I've caught so much embezzlement. If dentists knew what was going on up front, half of that would not have happened.
Fantastic. Marissa, tell me, if people want to get in touch with you, if people want to learn more about what your team is doing, workshops, website, please tell us where we can find you.
Yeah. So if they go to dentalpracticemanagementagency.com is our website. All the information's on there. The contact is actually my cell phone. So reach out. We'd be happy to help with whatever, even if it's just, I have questions. I'm, you know, worried. I'm, you know, 5 years before retirement. I don't know what to do. We talk to people all the time and don't charge them. We just truly are here to make sure that people are successful and not suck their time and money. That is our motto of our company.
Fantastic. Marissa, thank you for your time. I appreciate you being with us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It was awesome.